Good afternoon, everyone. Let's take our seats and get ready. We have a full afternoon. And did everybody get their energy bar back at lunch?
No, I didn't have time for lunch.
All right. If you're good after this panel, we'll have a door prize. Is the door prize people here? All right. Well, you'll have 45 minutes to do that. Because we're going to do it between the two panels, okay? All right, the first panel is, there is some long title of, that I don't quite remember, but it's, you know, do you like to read dirty books? No, that isn't what it was. Or books with sex and all that good stuff. Just kidding. Actually, though, it is about reading, and we have, and the different ways that we can read today. It's just not our old, you remember the days of the old long playing 33 and a third records? Those were good sounding records though. But anyway, now we have more options, which is wonderful. And we have three very knowledgeable people to talk, because if you depended on me, you'd be out of luck. So we have Deb Lewis, who is, a technology coordinator. Come on, you guys. I know you're looking for chairs. Can you hold it down? Okay. She's a technology coordinator at the Washington Assistive Technology Program. Where's my gavel? At the University of Washington, we have Frank Cuta, who is chair of the Patron Advisory Council for the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library. And we have Reggie George, an assistive technology specialist with the Department of Services for the Blind. If we can't go wrong with this panel, guys, we'll never go wrong. So I'm going to turn it over to my panel. They probably decided how they're doing this, so I will give it to them. Hey, I'm going to come around to the gavel and start whacking heads pretty soon. So try to find your seats, but kind of keep it down out of respect for the panel, okay? So I think Frank is starting out. Mr. Cuta.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago that you just waited for your talking books to come and you had your choices. Well, you had talking book topics, and if you got real adventurous, you went out and got stuff from Recordings for the Blind. And wow, nowadays, it's just an explosion of all the various places. You can get resources and there's a lot of new technology, and we're going to talk mostly about the technology today. I'm going to talk about my favorite player, the stream. The new wireless stream. And if you haven't had your hands on one and played with one, you probably have a friend that has one. And I suggest you take a look at it. It is a great portable solution. It used to be the new player from the Library of Congress is a wonderful machine. I mean, great sound, great control, but it's not that portable. And if you want a portable solution, the new stream with Wi-Fi capability is wonderful. Okay, it doesn't have Bluetooth, and it doesn't have the greatest speaker in the world. But it does have the Wi-Fi connection access, and it gives you access to download Bard without a computer, to copy Bard books from a cartridge. You can sign up and download podcasts, and you get listen to Audible books from the Audible service. You can access live internet radio streams, Wikipedia, the Newsline service, if you signed up for it. It lets you do bookmarks, and it lets you move around 30 seconds, 1 second, or 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes. You can choose how far you want to jump around. And I'm a person that falls asleep a lot listening to books, and I have to find my way back, you know? And I love that control. So, along the same line, in the next few years, your standard NLS cartridge machine, the one that you get from the library, is also going to have wireless capability. It will be replaced by a new version in about 2 years that will have Wi-Fi access or some kind of internet access. I guess I'm not sure how they're going to connect it to the internet, but it will be connected to the internet. So then the library will be able to distribute by just putting stuff on your player. They will have to depend on the mail service to send you cartridges. You want a book, within minutes or an hour or whatever, it'll be on your player. They just put it there, okay? And the other thing they're going to do sometime in the near future is there's a new less expensive Braille output technology called the Orbit 20, which is about the size of the old Braille speaker. It's about 6 inches by 4 inches by one. And it takes an SD card and it has some other connectivity. I think it's USB or Bluetooth. It doesn't have Bluetooth. Anyway, it is under $500, and it's widely rumored that the Library of Congress is going to be buying them, and they will be distributed to people who want them, and the same kind of loan service that you get your player, that your current library player. So that is my part of the presentation. Now we're on to the high-tech part of the presentation, and Debbie has some great things to show us.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to talk to you about a few items of technology that relate to reading, and I have some exciting things as well. I usually get up here and give you presentations about iPhones, but I'm actually not going to do that at all today. So you're going to get different things from me. So I'm going to talk about access to commercial books and the two particular services that I'm going to talk about are Kindle and Audible. And many of you have read Kindle books. Well, I guess I will mention iDevices. Many of you have read Kindle books on your iPhones or your iPads, and many of you have read Audible books on your iPhones or your iPads. And many of you have read Audible books on your stream, which Frank was just mentioning, right? And that's a great way to read Audible books. That was the first way I read an Audible book. But I think that some of us are not so high-tech and don't exactly want all those complications. And we'd just like to talk to it about the book and get it read that way. So I have the various versions of the Amazon Echo. And I have all three of the current Amazon Echo models to show you. And Rick wanted to know why we needed to own so many. And because they exist, guys. That's a good reason. Now, Amazon believes I should own them. In fact, when I bought my last one, which is the Echo Dot, they wanted to sell me six. I thought maybe it was because they were a big fan of Braille. But actually, the deal is that if you buy five, you get one free. That didn't actually quite work on me, but there's still time. I've only bought one, and I could decide we need more of them. I can envision that. So I have today, three different Amazon Echo products. I'm going to describe them. I'm going to tell you just really briefly what the Echo does and then give you a reading demonstration. And what I want to say is that these devices and others like them, because Google now has a product called Google Home and Apple is working on their home product as well. This technology is really coming into play. And one of the things we were talking about at lunch is the fact that there are a lot of appliances and other commercial products that are not very accessible right now. I've been trying to buy an accessible oven, and you just can't. But I got a notice from Amazon and a notice from my appliance provider that has provided most of the appliances at my house, which announced to me in both of those notices that we've gotten together and you can now have Echo-enabled appliances from us anytime you're ready, and I'm ready. So that's why we needed more Echoes. So anyway, I'm going to tell you just really quickly about these. The first one that I have is the standard traditional Echo, and I call it the Pringles can. If any of you remember Pringles, or I think they're still around. So this is a cylinder. It's tall. It's about 10 inches tall. It has 7 microphones built into it. They're always listening. They're listening right now. And if I mention her wake word, she'll come alive and wait for me to give her a command of some kind. So I'm very careful how I talk about her, and that to keep her sleeping. And so we're not using that wake word, which begins with an A. We And she doesn't know how to spell, so that helps me. But I always just refer to it as the Pringles can. The important thing about the Pringles can version of Echo is that she does require being plugged in. She has to have power. And she is the most expensive Echo. And she is the original Echo. So she, you know, there is... This was the only one that you could get for a long time. And she's the one that we will actually demonstrate in a couple of minutes. She has a round piece of the top of her cylinder is her volume control. And then she has two tactile buttons, on top of her. One of them is for turning the microphone on and off. If you do want her to stop listening, you're going to have a conversation you don't want her to hear. You know, sensitive stuff, like you're talking about your Apple products or something. And the other one is a button that you use for pairing and resetting her and things like that when she has been evil and needs to be reset. So that's one Echo. The second one that I have, where to go? I lost it. There it is. This is the Echo Tap, and the reason they call it the Tap, this is my dog Praline's favorite Echo. It has a lot of teeth marks on it. It has been retrieved very often and taken to her crate. And this Echo operates on batteries, so it can be carried off to her crate and she can listen to music. She hasn't learned how to say the wake word, though. This Echo, to get it to listen to you, you have to press a button on the front of it. So, and it has also some buttons on the top that you can use to control the volume and some things like that. But it's a much smaller. It's about a third shorter and quite a bit lighter. And it does operate on batteries, but it has about the same sound, as the first one. And this is, as I says, called the Echo Tap. And it's very portable, and it charges sitting on a little, kind of like a little trivet, you know, like when you put your drink on. So you can put your drink on it when you take your, when your dog has taken your Echo somewhere else. You can go ahead and put your drink there. But otherwise, she sits there, and that's how she gets her charge. And then my last one that I have is the second generation Echo Dot. And it is about the size of a hockey puck. And I always refer to it as the hockey puck Echo, but it is the Echo Dot second generation, and it's just a very small round cylinder. The first one of these didn't have a very good speaker in it, but this one actually does. But this also has, this particular one also has the ability to plug in an analog speaker and also has the ability to connect to Bluetooth so that you can connect it into your stereo system or other systems, so that's great. So what all can you do with her besides read? Of course, you can have her order things for you from particularly Amazon. You can also have her, you can ask her lots of questions. Alexa, what time is it?
The time is 1:37 p.m.
Okay, good. So we've got her attention a little bit. And you can ask her to do a variety of things. And if you have appliances that she can control, then you can ask her to do that. So you could ask her to set your oven. You could ask her to set alarms. You can ask her to do that. So you can ask her all kinds of interesting things. You can have her read the news to you. You can have her play various kinds of music. But we're talking about books. So I am going to ask her to read the most recent Audible book that I have had loaded into the system. I could also ask her to read it by name, but I can't remember. It has a long name. So I'm just going to ask her to read the most recent one. So, Alexa, read my Audible book.
Getting your book from Audible. Resuming Divine Collision. There's 2 minutes left in the chapter and 9 hours, 27 minutes left in the book.
Either dragging a suspected thief.
So now it's just reading an Audible book.
By the time captive and captor reached the road, about 20 onlookers.
Alexa, stop. And she stops on command, usually. Once in a while, she starts reading on her own, too, by the way. She started reading the other day when I had a big meeting going on. And I was like, stop that. You don't do that now. Yeah. And she also recognizes, I've voice trained her, But she actually recognizes my voice speeded up because I made a recording in case I couldn't get her on wireless here, and I made a recording of all this, and then I played it back at a fast speed, and at a very high-pitched, fast voice, I was saying her name, and she was running through all the assignment really quickly. It was very funny. So she can also read Kindle books. And when she reads the Audible book, she read that exactly using the Audible book format. So the reader of the Audible book, whoever that would be for the particular book, read the book. But when we have her read Kindle books, she is going to have to use her own voice to do that. And I have sent off a list of things to Amazon that she does not pronounce correctly. But so, for example, when she sees in a book I was reading, the author several times said, well, that's a wash, you know, meaning it just isn't, it's all even, it washes out, it's not worth anything. So she read, that's a Washington. And so I told her that wasn't right. And you saying you can't correct it. You can correct her voice recognition. And so that is, I've done a lot of work with her there, but I can't correct what she does when she's reading. And so we've been talking to Amazon about that. So let's see if we can get her to read the Kindle book. Alexa, read my Kindle book.
Resuming from Kindle, The Obesity Code, Unlocking the Secrets of Weight Loss. Genomas, 181.
And she's actually reading in the index because that's where she is right now.
91.
And so we don't care about that. Alexa, stop. So the problem with the Kindle book is that if she were your only way to access the Kindle book, she can only read it straight through. She can go back a little and forward a little, but she can't go to chapter 3 or chapter 4 in your Kindle book. So I can't get her back to the beginning of the book without using another device. So if you have her and she's your only device of this kind, you'll need a 13-year-old or somebody with a tablet who can log in and help you occasionally back up your book. So that's it. Now, on the topic of tablets, I want to just mention I'm now holding up the Amazon Wi-Fi tablet. This is called the Fire tablet. And this tablet, I forgot to put online, but this tablet is a very, very inexpensive tablet. And, you know, an iPad is going to be $700 or $800, and I like my iPad, but this is available to you for about $80. And if you want a little less snazzy tablet than the one I bought, you can usually get it for right around $40. So this is a fully functioning tablet, and it has a pretty fully functioning screen reader built into it. The screen reader Amazon has is called VoiceView. This tablet is kind of an Android tablet. It is not a full Android tablet. Amazon uses kind of a hybrid of Android. But if you have used the Android TalkBack screen reader, VoiceView looks rather familiar. And it's, it has basic commands and basic things you can do. And this tablet can also read Kindle books and Audible books, and actually has a Bard app for it. So if you wanted to read, you know, that way, you could. And has just a whole variety of things that are out there and available for it. And it's a very, very inexpensive tablet option. So if you were buying one of the Echo products for yourself, but you did need someone to help you with the pieces of getting back to the parts of the books or whatever to get back occasionally, you could probably afford to buy them the tablet. But you could also use this as an option for yourself. And I don't find it's the greatest solution for a primary tablet, but it is a great solution as a reading tool, and I have really liked it. So I brought it so that people could be able to have a look at that later and see the size of it. But it's really about the size of an iPad mini. And this one does have stereo speakers, so it sounds really good. So that's that. The final device that I brought, just thinking about things for reading and to try to appeal to everyone, is that we have the HumanWare Braille Note Touch, which is the new HumanWare Braille display and product, which is based on Android. And it can also read my Kindle and audio books, and it does a good job of getting you back and forth in them, and has Braille, and has an on-screen Braille keyboard that you use. And it's really very, very efficient and very fast. So we have all of these, and we'll try to get them over into the exhibits, to the WATAP exhibit, after the technology presentations are over. But I'm around all weekend, and we'll probably have these around all weekend. So if you don't get a chance to see them and do want to get a chance to see them, I'll have them available. And so I think, is Reg next?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, and you're running a little ahead, and that'd be good because I think we're going to have a lot of questions.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And definitely, I have some questions about the echoes. Reg?
Okay. By applause, how many totally blind Android users do we have here using TalkBack? Not very many. It is now a viable option. I still think that if you're an iPhone or an iDevice user, you're not going to be nearly as lonely. But as far as getting support, but there is an Audible app for Android that is accessible, and the KNFB Reader app is only $20 for Android right now. One of the purposes of this presentation was to highlight some of the new reading technologies that are a little bit less expensive and a little bit easier to use. And as such, I think we would be remiss in not at least taking a quick look at the KNFB Reader, because it really has changed the playing field. You get your scanning and processing done in about 5 seconds, and you get amazingly accurate speech. And so that's what I want to do. And then if I have a second, I'll show you iBooks. Apple is an electronic publisher of books, as is Amazon, and there's a lot of content out there, and it's very accessible. Once you get into a book, and when you open it back up, it always resumes on the same page and reads very well with voiceover. So that's what we want to do. I want to make sure the speaker is working so you guys can hear it. Okay, I think that's going to work. So I have a ScanJig scanner here. Okay. It just started playing on its own there, kind of like her Echo. anyway, stand that I have, I would not recommend for books, but it kind of reminds me of a flatbed scanner, the way that it's designed. It's a long rectangular box that folds flat, kind of like a big sewing box or something. And when you raise the lid up, you can clip the paper to the inside of the lid, and the phone is facing it. It sits at the front of the stand on a little shelf facing the paper. Hmm. And with this scheme, you don't get any shadows onto the paper. It's just made out of white plastic, and it works very well. So I have the document here, which is basically the instructions for using the stand. I'm going to put my I'm going to unlock the phone here. Let's see if we can get things working a little better.
You mail 19 minutes ago. New voicemail from Jody Earth.
Hmm.
20 minutes ago. Page 2. Books folder, 7 apps.
Okay.
Books.
Launch KNFB Reader.
Which app would you like to use? Money Reader.
Okay, the Bluetooth speaker is, I love technology demos. Okay, we have the app open now. I was using Siri, and there's a microphone in the speaker, and so it wasn't hearing me as well as the microphone in the iPhone. Now I will put the phone on the shelf here, facing the paper. And when you do this, there's a, you can just press the volume up button on the phone to take the picture of the document.
Product description. Setup instructions, page 1 of 2. The scan jig is designed for easy tactile positioning of both a smart device and documents for correct focus, alignment, and field of view. Once set up, the stand holds smartphones or tablets in a vertical portrait orientation and at an angle where the device's touch screen interface is facing the user. The stand can also hold a document in the same vertical portrait orientation and angle directly behind the smartphone or tablet.
Okay, so you get the idea. It did a great job. It read straight from the top. And I just think that that's pretty cool. If you're wanting to scan your own book, then that is the way you could do it. I think I'm going to go ahead and stop there and just open this up for questions.
All right. Yeah. My first question is, why would you buy an Echo Dot versus an Echo Hockey Puck versus whatever?
Sure. Why would you buy the Hockey Puck versus the Tap versus the the Pringles can? So I think right now one of the reasons – originally you could not purchase – the Dot unless you owned one of the other ones. That was a little marketing ploy. But now they've stopped that crap because Google came on the market and they've got to get busy and sell these. So that's my take. But basically, one reason you might buy the Hockey Puck is that it is smaller. It only weighs a few ounces. You can kind of hold it in your hand. And it's much cheaper. So you can buy that one for $50. And you can now buy it even if you don't own any others. So it can be your only one now. Why you might buy the Tap is because you would like a portable device that you can carry around to different parts of the house or yard or whatever. And it's the only one that actually runs on batteries. To be honest with you, I don't know why right now you would buy the Pringles can because it's big and heavy, but Rick says it sounds better.
It does sound good, yeah.
And it does sound good. So if you're worried about that, and you can play music, lots of music on these. You can play all your own Prime music, and you can play all the Prime music Amazon lets you play. And now there's an unlimited Prime option for like $4 a month, which is pretty inexpensive, but gives you lots of Prime music. So the answer is yes, you might want that because it does sound, you know, it does sound better, but it also costs quite a bit more. So it's like $170 new, although you can find it on sale pretty often. And I got all of mine except the Dot when they had the big Prime Day, you know, where they knock everything off like half. And so I got my others that way. So those days come around. But I would say that they do appeal to slightly different groups of people. They pretty much do, though, perform the same functions. So if you're trying to get it to play particular content or you're trying to get it to access your appliances that are Echo-enabled or whatever, you'll have the same results with all of them.
All right. Any questions from the audience? Okay. Do we have a mic runner? You may have to just speak up.
Oh.
Hold on. We really do need to get...
We do need a mic runner. Yeah.
I just had a quick question about one of them. You can plug a physical speaker in, like to your laptop or something. Have you used that, and does it work well? Because some people might have an existing library they've ripped from CDs or even a hi-fi system at home. They'd want to plug into that, and does it work as a speaker? So you don't have to deal with you can just have one speaker on your computer at home.
You can plug the Pringles can large Echo in as a speaker, and you can plug the Tap in as a speaker. You can plug speakers into the Dot. So that's the way that goes. So if you want this device to be the speaker, the answer is yes. You can make either of the two larger Amazon products become the speaker for another system. But you can make the Dot become the driver of your speakers. If you have, like I have a nice Bose Bluetooth speaker, and I make my Dot drive that.
And I will make a comment. I really want a Dot for Christmas. Take note, Lisa.
And you can get him 6 for the price of 5.
Next question.
My next question is on, I have an iPhone 6 and I do have the Bar Mobile, and I'm just kind of curious. You were talking about, downloading books, through the Bar Mobile, mm-hmm, for the stream, but what if you download the, to your phone? Can you do that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yes. It's a Bard app. You just install it. That's the mobile app you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you just download.
And then you play it on your phone.
Sure.
Yeah.
There are actually 2 ways to get Bard apps to your phone that work well. One of them is directly through the app. The other is through Dropbox. And the advantage of the Dropbox version is then you can play that app on your stream and on your phone and on everything that you can move, that you have access to moving the app around. So the 2 ways would be to get it into Dropbox from anywhere, and then that Dropbox can load it onto your phone, or you can download it directly onto your phone.
But the only way to get it into Dropbox would be to get into a browser?
No, you can do it. You can do it from the browser of your phone or from the browser of a PC. You could download it, right, to Dropbox from the Bard site, yes.
Yeah. Next question.
All the speaking technology is wonderful, especially when it pronounces things so well. But I have one big gripe about most of these systems, and it's a big gripe with me, is that you cannot cut and paste any of the text from these things. When you need to know how to spell somebody's name or address or a technical word, you can't do it. You can. I just heard from somebody behind me, you can. So that must be new. Oh,
well,
iPhone you can. But
only some apps on the iPhone. If it's an iPhone that's restricted, you know, if you're talking about restricted content, so when you're talking about the Kindle or Audible or whatever, that's content is restricted, and they're not going to let you cut and paste it for any reason because of the copyright restriction. And it doesn't matter whether you're on the iPhone or what you're on. In that case, you won't be able to do that. But under some other conditions, you know, you certainly may be able to do that. But, you know, that's when, and particularly if the book is read by something like Audible, where it's a reader, or Bard, where it's a reader, there is not the control of, because you're reading, you're playing a recording, basically. When you're reading a Kindle book, you can't cut and paste, but most apps will allow you to. There are ways to spell, and there are ways to get access to what is being read in a smaller way. But the problem with Audible and NLS, of course, is those are recorded books. So it's the human would have to stop and spell it to you.
Does some of that have to do with copyright protection? Because the copyright laws have been changed a few years ago, where we have the right, even if it's copywritten, to copy and paste
some
text.
No, this has to do with the way in which the book is produced. It's an Audible recorded book. And the technology does not have a way to spell the material in a recording. It does if there's text.
Now, you can't with Bookshare, can't you?
Bookshare is text. It's really text.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Bookshare is, anything that's got text, you could. But Audible does not have any text,
right,
and NLS does not have text, and that's the reason you can't with those.
Okay.
Next question.
Yeah, I have a question for Frank. Oh, closer? How's that? Okay. For Frank, you said there's a Braille, an affordable Braille one under $500. Is that right?
Yeah, this is the Orbit 20. Is American Printing House, I think, is producing this. And it was, they were saying it was going to cost about $500 for a 20-cell, you know, refreshable Braille display.
Okay.
And if they buy them in huge quantities, I understand the library might be able to buy them for about $300.
Wow.
It's not available yet.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
No, we saw it at convention. But, yeah.
December. So
it's coming.
You say it's like a Braille and Speak, like a Braille and Speak was?
All right.
Okay.
No. One more question.
Just a second, on my way. All right, you have a question?
Oh, all right, go ahead. Hey, this is Gina Allen. I get Bookshare books on my Victor. And every once in a while, I run into a word where I'd like to know how to spell it. you know, and this is text, so there, I guess, would be that possibility. But how do I do that with the Victor Reader Stream? Really?
Yeah.
You really can't?
You can't? I can. I have textbooks that I get spelling on in my stream.
If it's a textbook, you could.
Okay.
So if it's a regular book, even though it's text, if I run into a word that I would like to know the spelling of, I can't do it.
Not if it's on the menu. If it's on the menu, you can.
If you're using the DAISY formatted version of them, it doesn't have, I don't believe it has a way to do that. Somebody says it does.
Yeah, if it shows up on the menu, you can do it. Otherwise, you can't. I mean.
Yeah, but I'm not sure it shows up. That's what I'm saying.
Terry, I'd like to get with you at some point.
If there is text in the book, then when you go down through the levels by pressing 8, you can get to a level where you can move by character or by word and spell
or
through
spell.
Words.
Yeah, the spell is a choice.
On the stream. And I wanted to ask Deb, on the Echo, can you make the Echo spell a word? Can you ask it to spell a word?
Yeah, I think you can. What would you like her to spell?
And you can do it with Siri as well. So if you heard a word in a book, you can ask it to
spell
that word.
Sometimes, though, what Siri does that's a problem is it doesn't actually spell it. It just says it with the letters all separated.
So, thank you very much, panel.
Hey, just one more question. She had her hand up. I missed her.
Go ahead. This is for Deb. I have two Echo Dots. And is there a way, instead of running all over the place, to get a list of the skills?
They're on the webs. They're on the alexa.amazon.com site. They're all there. And
okay.
So if you go there and you click on skills, there you have about 5 choices. There's like settings, there's skills, there's music, there's books, and so you'll see actually what you've ever downloaded and ever had her said. That's where you do the voice training. That's where you do everything with her. And you can see all the skills. There's also an email you can sign up from Amazon that gives you each week a list of all the new skills that have been set up for her. And I recommend trying. She's got a Braille challenge. I recommend trying that one. That's kind of fun.
Thank you, panel. Join me in thanking them. Okay, we're going to get some door prizes, so we'll get Daryl over to Reggie. So I'm going to go upstairs, and I'm going to pet my poor digital player and make her feel like she's still wanted. I went to a tea at the library, and I sat next to this lady who was 104, and she said, "Oh, yes, I download books onto my thumb drive." And I'm going, "Oh, good God, I don't even know what a thumb drive is." So I went home and told John, I said, "There was this lady at the library and she uses a thumb screw for her books." He said, "No, I think it's a thumb drive." So that's why they had me run this panel. You can tell, right? All right. Are we ready for surprises, Daryl?
And if the Echo can play Jeopardy as well.
And if the next panel would come up, that would be terrific.
Okay, here we are. I'm not Julie, but I was asked to pinch hit, so we have a $25 gift certificate from the South King County chapter.
And who's this talking?
This is Casey.
Oh, Casey. Hi.
Hi. Hey. So, Joffrey Parker. Joffrey Parker in the room?
Guess not.
Guess not. You're out in the hallway. Come on in here, because you only can win if you are in the room. Or if you know you're working, if we you
come on over to the.
So, but we got Yvonne Thomas Miller.
Thank you.
Yvonne Thomas Miller, you in the room? I guess not. Okay, we'll draw another name.
Yeah. Jeff's the speaker.
I'm here. Draw my name.
You can go ahead and go.
Danielle Maher.
You can go ahead and go.
Daniel Maher, she here?
Oh, yes.
Okay, we'll just keep on going. Well, Daryl warned me of this. He said there are not many people in here. So we'll just keep it going here.
Sue Amateur's here.
Is anyone sitting here?
Tracy Vigeron.
Next, go over to Sue.
She here?
And then the next one over could be you.
Okay, we'll keep it going here.
That's why I say,
Reggie, you're going to have to move.
I'd have to have Alexis sing us a song here while we keep going here. Well, $25 gift certificate from South King County. Let's see. We got Jesse Farron. How'd you run? Nope. We'll keep on drawing until we have to stop. Patty Eaton. All right. Hey. $25 gift certificate to Patty Eaton. Are we doing any more?
Okay.
All right, we'll do one more. Okay, we got a lot to give away here, so what are we giving away?
By the way, Casey does our book for him, so it was apropos. And he gets lonely, so you guys should join him.
Yeah, we got to get more people. We'll talk about that. I hear everybody say, "Oh, I loved your email about the forum." I said, "Come on and join me." So it's the perfect time reading books. So use those devices and come on the forum. So we got another $25 gift certificate from the South King chapter. Let's see. This is Josetti. Kernahan?
Josette Kernahan.
Okay, we'll take that one. Then we'll draw another one here. Okay, this is a long one. Let's see. We got B. Evelyn Hinson. B. Evelyn Hinson. Not here.
Where are all these people anyway?
Well, they're all scattered around.
The Young and the Restless isn't on. I don't know.
I hope not. Oh. Well, there is the William Excel story, and that's right. Yep. Scott McCallum. I'm here, but I'll decline. What?
I can't accept it. I'm a state government. Well,
that means it is forfeited to me. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, well.
Well, but I want to say welcome to Scott. He's our new superintendent of the school for the blind.
Yeah. Looking forward to hearing your message tomorrow. It'll be great.
We sure are.
Okay, then we'll keep going here. Stuart Russell. All right, Stuart. I knew we could count on you.
There had to be a techie in the crowd at some point.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you, Casey. We'll call you back in a while, okay?
All righty.
So don't leave.
I will not.
Okay. Well, our next panel is about advocacy and what can be the result of advocacy, but I can't even say it, and years of work in the area of technology. So since I don't want her to escape, we have Deb Lewis again, who is, I'm going to say she is treasurer of WSCB because a lot of what she did was her WSCB hat, but also her WADA hat. Then we have, is it Brian? Brian? I'm sorry, just a second.
Pardon?
Ryan. Okay. Ryan Leisinger, I hope I said that right. And he is a resolutions architect, which I had an interesting title, with the state of Washington. Is it Department of Enterprise Services?
Central IT, yes.
Oh, Central IT, all right. They have all the new names for departments since I retired. And then we also have Jeff Bishop, who is our rep from the American Council of the Blind, but he's also with the University of Arizona as a disability technology specialist. I want to make sure I didn't say Arizona State because that would be really insulting. So anyway, so we're going to start with Deb to tell you a little history of why we're up here this afternoon. Deb? You want to come up here?
Well, I'm going to just, okay. It's easier to sort of stay here.
All right.
So thanks Sue, and thanks all of you for being in here this afternoon. And I'm going to be fairly quick because I don't have as much to say on this topic as our other distinguished panelists do, but I want to just talk a little bit about the fact that advocacy is an important role in this and that advocacy of WSCB has really, really paid off. And so some of you have been with us long enough to remember this event. But back in like 94? Yeah, yep. Sue has to remind me when it was because, yeah, in the yep. Tri-Cities.
Terry would remember.
Terry remembers it for sure, yeah. So back in 1994 in the Tri-Cities, we brought a resolution to WCB talking about the fact that the state of Washington was developing some not accessible kiosks in which they would provide public services. And this was not exactly a very, very cool thing to us as WCB members because we could see ourselves being left out in the cold. And I know that people like Sue Amater wanted to go out at 3 in the morning to the mall and sign up for a fishing license or something. So I knew we couldn't let this go. So it was really hard to help people develop a vision for why this mattered because really people were like, well, I don't care whether we can do this 24/7 and I don't care whether a bunch of things like driver's licenses and things that I don't ever get to apply for anyway are going to be available to apply for anytime I want at the mall because I don't do that anyway. And what they didn't, you know, really, what was really hard to picture, of course, is, well, it's this today and it's something else tomorrow and they're planning to leave you out. And so basically, to help our members understand how just cool this was, we all got up and took our chartered bus that we'd used to get the West Side people over to Pasco. And at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, after hospitality on Friday night, I'm amazed that some of us even remember this event. We went to the mall in Pasco, and the mall itself was closed, but the foyer was open where these kiosks were. And we all went up to the kiosks and attempted to use them, which was impossible because it was like walking up to your TV set and just kind of touching the glass and hoping something happened. And nothing did. And so we had absolutely zero chance of using these things. And so then that motivated our organization to start the process. Now, 1994 is a long time. And what we said we thought we needed to have was some kind of policy or process in the state of Washington that would define accessibility for information technology that the state would buy and build and procure and would also describe what would happen in terms of making that accessible and an expectation that that would happen so that we could stop having experiences like these kiosk things where they said, oh, well, it's not accessible, but maybe someday we'll do that. And someday was never coming. Well, the good news about that project in Washington State was it died for lack of proper planning way beyond accessibility, and so it went away on its own. But in the meantime, we had been working toward trying to establish a class action activity and a number of other things. Well, we've carried this on for years, and most of you remember that different times in the past, Toby Olson from the Governor's Committee on Disability Issues and Employment has been here, and he's actually the former recipient of one of our awards, service awards that we do here in WCB. And Toby and I have not given up this cause, along with others, but I would say we are the two menaces that the state has put up with over time. In fact, I actually had an employer situation where my employer got kind of tired of my advocacy and things got a little tense, so I changed jobs and continued on. But basically, we have come the miles and finally come to a situation where the governor and a lot of other people in the state of Washington have said, yes, it is time to do that. And at the same time, Ryan Leisinger, who's going to speak to us here in a sec, had come from another organization where they had been practicing accessibility, and he was really pretty puzzled when he got here and found out that we really weren't very often, unless it accidentally happened. And so basically, he began to champion the cause from the inside, which is something we had not really had for a long time. The last time we'd had an internal champion was when Luther Smith, who recently passed away was a person with a significant disability, not vision, but a person with a disability who actually understood that this mattered for people who needed information access as much as curb cuts mattered for people who had physical access needs. And so he had championed this well in state government, but wasn't able to pull it off. But gradually, over time, we've been able to build these different initiatives and make this work. And so Ryan will present to us today about the policy that we have adopted in this state and some challenges we still face. But we're just really proud of the process we've started, and I'm very, very proud of the work that Ryan has particularly done from the inside on WATEC to help bring this forward. And kind of timing was everything, because Governor Jay Inslee wanted something to happen. And by golly, everybody did remember where to turn, because we'd been pretty loud on this. And so we brought the right people together, and very appreciative of that. So after Ryan talks, then Jeff will kind of catch us up a little bit on the national scene. And if we have any time, we'll take questions. But I'd like to turn it over to Ryan Leisinger. Thanks.
I'll sit here. Hello, my name is Ryan Leisinger. I work in a little tiny group inside of Washington State's Central IT. My group is kind of special. We don't have managers or supervisors. We are an experiment practicing self-organization. I mention this when I talk about this because that self-organizational model gives me the ability to work on things and push things forward, as long as how I can relate that they tie to kind of some bigger vision parts that we have. And accessibility has been a passion of mine for a while, so I get into this role where I have this ability to put my energy where I think it's fulfilling our vision and our values, and accessibility and getting a policy in place and getting some strategies and initiatives going in the state to not just have a piece of paper that says that everything is to be accessible, but some ways to show progress, some ways to make it uncomfortable for those who choose not to follow the policy, some ways to create empathy and let people understand that what we're trying to do and building things accessible and testing and fixing up our old stuff, and if it's not accessible, let's get something else in place, and that is just for the greater good. So I lay that out because that has been very important in my ability to put my energy towards this work. My background is I'm a web developer. I built web pages. I built web pages for about 12 years before I ever knew anything about accessibility. And I use those numbers because that is common. That is common with the people out there who are building things in the world, and it's just not something that they talk about a lot. So what happened with me was I was working on a project. My boss came and put Section 508 on the desk in front of me and said we were selling to the feds and we had to meet this. And I read it, and I got excited about it. I wanted what we built to be available to the most people possible. And I took that when I went to work for Washington State 5.5 years ago. One of the first things I asked when I got there, and they gave us a project on the web, is I said, where's your accessibility standards? What are we going to build to? My coworkers pointed me to a scanned-in PDF hosted on a website that was completely not accessible. And heck, it wasn't even readable just looking at it, because it was a poorly scanned-in PDF. And this was a guideline that had been put in place, and the intentions behind it were excellent. And heck, there's someone in this room who probably worked on that back in 2004. Sorry, Deb. But it was this soft guideline. And when I would try to say we can't buy this because we're not doing it accessible, when someone wanted me to add a plugin to our HR system, they would call the office of the chief information officer, and the office of the chief information officer would say, we don't have a policy. We have a soft guideline that says you don't do that. So that became something that I became very interested in. I had the opportunity to actually move to the office of the chief information officer in February of 2015. and was able to start working on more policy work and more initiatives around this at the beginning of this year, besides just kind of self-advocacy work that I'd done. I organized a Global Accessibility Awareness Day that I've done for 3 years. I organize training for state developers just on the side of my work. I just think it's important to do. So to the policy a little bit. The policy is policy number 188. The very top of the policy, the main idea is all covered technology has to be accessible. And that's huge. But we know that that was our goal. That's what we want to do. We want everything that the state builds to be available to a certain standard to the most people possible. The standard that we're using is an established and testable standard. It's used across the whole world. We didn't make up anything on the standard. Inside of that comes a series of requirements for the independent agencies, because we don't have auditing. We don't have the ability to be checking everyone's work. What this policy largely does is push it to the individual agencies to say, if you buy something, if you build it, if you modify it, it has to be accessible to this standard. So I would love to be able to be checking everyone's work and have a checkbox that people had to fill out. It's not there right now. What I'm hoping is that with the actions that we're already seeing from this policy, we can raise even more awareness. We can have a couple systems that, you know, don't meet the standard so that we can really say, why aren't you doing this? This policy has already, it's been in place since August 11th, and it has gotten a ton of interest. University of Washington is doing an entire day and a half class to train their coordinators for post-secondary education based off of this training. That same group that's doing that training was in Anaheim at a conference 2 weeks ago, and they started emailing me because other colleges in post-secondary education had seen this policy in other states and were asking them about it. After we got this up, Department of Corrections instantly published all of their plans and process and policies so that all of their applications are accessible. The community colleges are doing a lot of work on it as well as a lot of other agencies. So in the short months that we've had this up and going, we're really getting some traction out of it. And the fact that I'm here talking to everyone today, I see as another sign of that. Each agency is required to identify a accessibility coordinator. And that is a person who is responsible for resolving and publishing and acknowledging issues and things through it. We greatly borrowed from the Americans with Disabilities Act coordinator concept with that, knowing that you got to get someone in place to talk to. And we have some other things going as well. The ideas of getting lots of feedback from users, having centralized places that if people do have access issues, they can enter a form and send off a comment. And so this is external websites, HR systems. It helps with our hiring. Washington State wants to be known as someone who's hiring everyone, people with disabilities, and this was actually seen as a barrier to that. So this was another driver in that. That's kind of the big part. No, this didn't fix everything. Putting this in place was not the ability to flip a switch and make it so we have access to our websites for everybody. But we're hoping to move things forward to draw attention to this and to gain some momentum to make Washington as accessible as possible.
Great.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I work at the University of Arizona as an IT accessibility analyst, and we have a team of people who work in our office who work on accessibility issues across our campus. I thought I'd start here first to sort of give you a feel for how things are slightly different for us and some of the challenges that we have in our environment. So our university this is Ryan's favorite thing, is a very, very decentralized IT environment. Isn't that challenging? Isn't that fun? Yeah. So you can have a department that decides, well, I want to put up a website. And they don't talk to anybody. Or they put up videos. And I know this doesn't really, you know, for the majority in the room, it doesn't, but closed caption, right? They're not closed captioning their videos, for example. Because they don't know, right? That's the biggest hurdle. So one of the things that we're doing at our university is we're establishing accessibility champions across departments so that we educate a small number and we keep them educated on what's happening in the accessibility space, on web accessibility guidelines, audio description, closed captioning, the whole bit, you know, everything that 508 talks about and WCAG 2.0 AA talks about. And then we get these people to go out and do a lot of the work for us to be able to train and keep their developers up to speed on the things that they need to do to make sure that they're writing code that's accessible. We also have a procurement process similar to Washington here. And anything over $5,000, we have to go through an audit to ensure that it's accessible. Sometimes things slip through the cracks, but for the majority of things, we catch them during the RFP process. So I say all of this about, you know, secondary education to say that if you're a student in this environment, the biggest thing that you can do is make sure to make people aware of issues, right? They can't fix them unless they're aware that these issues exist. Let's talk about our national efforts. And one of the big things that's coming up at the end of the year is who watches TV? Right? Okay. Now, I know you have Comcast out here, right? What other cable providers do you have out here? Charter. Okay.
And CenturyLink has it too.
CenturyLink too. Okay. So coming up, and I'll be talking a little bit about this tomorrow, but December 20th is the drop dead date for the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act. This is something that Eric Bridges and ACB has worked very, very hard on and got passed. And the rule is that you have to have an accessible cable set-top box by December 20th. Okay? So I live in Arizona, and we have Cox primarily, and they never even told their customers that they did this. It took a number of phone calls for me. I would call them every 3 months and say, you know, do you have accessibility built into your cable boxes? What is accessibility? We didn't even know what that word means, right? Well, they do now. Now, they're not telling any of their customers about it. They're not advertising about it. But if you get their new boxes, they're accessible, and they purchased Comcast's technology. So if you're used to Comcast and you move to a place that has Cox cable, then you'll have basically Comcast. It's 100% identical to that, except they branded it a little different and put Cox names all over it and all of that. But the menus and everything is exactly the same. And who watched the Olympics with audio description? Wasn't that great? Yeah, it was good stuff. So one of the key areas that we are interested in ACB is to make sure that the technologies that you purchase today are accessible now and not into the future. So we are working with all of the leading technology companies. Microsoft was here earlier, and Jenny spoke to all of you about the work that is going on at Microsoft. I can tell you that Microsoft is working really hard for us. They're doing some really tremendous things. And if you're afraid to upgrade to Windows 10, don't be. There's some really, really good things coming in the future, which unfortunately we can't talk about due to non-disclosure agreements. But you can feel safe assured that Microsoft is putting our needs in the front line for sure. They have lots and lots of engineers working on accessibility. We work with Apple, we work with Google, and we work with Amazon as well. We're also working with Adobe, and we're working with them on a number of different areas. I serve on the Adobe Accessibility Advisory Council, and we're working with them across all of their products. So PDF documents, their systems for collaboration, you know, all of that. We're doing some really great things there. I want to talk about science and technology for just a second. So this is an area that is a great passion of mine. And one of the things that I told Microsoft when I was here a week ago, I just love this place, you see. If it wasn't for the rain. It's too hot in Arizona. What I told Microsoft is that, and I don't think that I would get in trouble for saying this at all, because it's really true, and I wouldn't have a problem saying it publicly, that we want to make sure that technology is not a barrier to access to whatever field you want to go into, right? So if you want to be a software engineer, or you want to work in engineering, electrical engineering, it doesn't matter. You know, you want to be a mathematician, it shouldn't matter. The technology that is developed today should not be the barrier to that level of access. It should be based on what you as a person do. And so, dream big, and, you know, push the industry to make sure that they're advocating for the needs of all of us, regardless of what field you want to go into. I think that's really important. There's the Teach Access group that's now been formed. This is a combination of academic and corporate companies who are working together to develop curriculum to teach accessibility concepts in universities, so that when students leave the classroom, they have an understanding of how to make an accessible website, or they have an understanding of how to make an application accessible that's developed for the desktop. And ACB is involved in that as well. So we're doing a lot of really great things around technology, and our focus, there was some discussion here at the conference about appliances and ovens and all these kinds of things. And this is a really, really key area, and I think we all need to be working harder on that.
Thank you. Well, they left lots of time for questions and discussion, so are there questions? All right, raise your hand. Do we still have a mic runner? Okay. And who's asking the question?
Oh, this is Reggie.
Okay, Reg.
And I just wanted to say to Ryan, thanks for everything that you're doing to make our systems accessible around the state. Travel and management system that we use, and I have no idea who developed it, but it's fantastic. And if they could find out who the vendor is and how that was done.
Use some
of that in the forms on some of the other systems. I think things would work a lot better, but you guys are doing a great job. Thank you.
Great. Somebody on my right, I think, had a question. Who is it, please?
Stuart Russell.
You're in the back, Stuart. There's somebody on my right, a late woman, I think. Darlene has a question.
Yes.
Darlene is over there on the...
Bernie...
What Darlene asked before... Well, okay, go ahead.
Okay. This is a technology that is completely overlooked. I've been fighting it for 15 years, and boy, does it make me mad. And that is accessibility to computer-controlled milling machines and lathes in a machine shop. Completely overlooked, except by the Lighthouse for the Blind in Seattle. But that software that they use is not usable for any other machines but the one brand that they purchase. And as a result, more machinists are being put out of work who can and do work, like me, in an independent shop that doesn't have the money to buy one of the expensive machines that Lighthouse for the Blind uses. Now, this has taken me a while to explain, but you'll see what's going on here. More and more machinists are being let go in these small independent shops because the cost of those types of machines is coming down, 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 and more of them are being used. But because the software, no matter who makes it, is not accessible, those guys have to be let go because they cannot operate those machines. Likewise, when people get laid off at Lighthouse for the Blind, which doesn't happen very often, I do not work for them, never have, but they can't go to work for other machine shops in most cases unless they know how to operate machines.
Bernie, do you have a question?
Yes. Why can't we get accessible software for those machines instead of everybody not lifting a finger about it except the wrong finger?
Okay.
Well, this is Jeff. I think the key principle here is to, if I were to start to work on this, I would go to the Lighthouse and talk to them first. And
Lighthouse.
Oh, hold on, Bernie.
Let him finish, Bernie.
And then ask them to work with us as an organization to advocate this issue with companies across the United States.
But
to show them what can be done and what you know, it's actually probably not that difficult. A lot of these things are computer controlled. It wouldn't probably take much to make them accessible.
They shouldn't.
No.
They will not.
Okay, but Bernie, what he's trying to tell you is that you've got to go to an advocacy organization that would help you deal with it. That's, the Lighthouse is not an advocacy organization.
But the nice thing about...
They have the technical expertise,
right. But...
So you would utilize their skill set to understand the concepts that are needed here. You could use them as a proving ground to other companies. And then, you know, we need a listing of the top five companies. If you can get that to me, Bernie, I would be happy to take that forward and see what we can do to help you out.
Bernie, I'm going to stop you. Jeff has just given you a solution to talk to him. Have you ever talked to Jeff? I don't think so.
No.
Okay. He's offered to talk to you. I'd take him up on it if I were you. Okay?
This is Debbie. If I can make a comment as well on this topic in general, not so much about Bernie's comment, but in general, what usually happens is in terms of developing accessibility, there has to be, for it to be successful, there have to be one of several elements that are in place. One of the possibilities is that, you know, legislation or policy can assist you if that exists. So if you can discover any, you know, state or federal organizations. Listen, Bernie.
Just hang on, Bern.
It's possible that you'll never succeed with your attitude, but I'm hoping that you will. So here's the deal. If you look at state and federal organizations that do have some obligation around this and are purchasing those devices, then there is a very good chance that could be one advocacy piece. The other piece, though, that is a really unfortunate thing, is that when we're into a niche environment and what you're really talking about, unfortunately, is something where there are not very many people who need it. It is unfortunate that it does get prioritized down by most people, and I think that's really true. And so that's why probably the best thing to look at would be, is there anyone who is purchasing the product who is in fact required to purchase accessibly, and is there any leveraging they can place because they are likely to have employees or contractors who need that product to be accessible? And frankly, if you can't find examples of that, it is going to be very, very tough to sell. That's just part of the reality.
It's the same sad reality that we face with medical equipment. Yes, it should be accessible so blind people could operate their own insulin pumps or their own. We have a case where someone's trying to use a feeding pump for their baby. And because we're such a small population, it's not right.
No, it's not right.
But sometimes when I worked for the Human Rights Commission, they'd say it's may not be fair, but it's not illegal.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So, okay, Darlene, you had a question?
This is Darlene. I just want to make this short. I want to thank you all, the panel, for talking about technology.
Thank you, Darlene. Okay, any other questions? Oh, Stuart, you had one. I'm sorry. I beg your pardon.
Okay, just this may be another case of a niche product. I know there's another device that gives access to thousands of channels, but it's not a cable company. It's called a Roku. I wonder if that is.
It's called a what?
A Roku.
The Roku.
Roku.
Wonder if that is.
I thought you said a Roku.
under the law that takes effect here at the end of the year.
Yeah, let me speak to that. Roku is an interesting challenge because it is a platform that has literally thousands of channels on it that you can get from their channel store. And these are channels that are developed independently of Roku, right? So not to say that the Roku box itself that comes from Roku shouldn't be accessible. It should. And we're going to be working on that. But I think it's similar to, for example, Xbox. Xbox has some native accessibility built into it now, and Microsoft is improving it. This is also true for even Apple TV. The apps that are developed for the platform sometimes are not accessible. And I think that the overwhelming majority on Roku might be troublesome.
Yeah.
But thank you for that. It's an area that we definitely need to put more focus on, that's for sure.
Yeah, Roku is a little like the DVD. It's kind of a chicken and egg thing. You can make an accessible DVD player, but the DVD is where the menu is actually embedded in the DVD. So the player, everybody says, where's the accessible DVD player? And I say, well, most of them are. It's the DVD that you bought to put on it that was not accessible. And so, like, where does that responsibility lie?
That's a tough one.
Any other questions?
Well,
okay. Shout out your name, please.
Okay, I got one from Jim McIntosh here.
Jim, go ahead.
I may have missed it, but what is going on in the area of just mainline cable TV? We have, you know, the Xfinity, you know, just good old Comcast. So wondering what's going on in the world of, you know, a little switch to turn on accessible TV on a standard TV set.
Funny that you mentioned that. So, Samsung, just don't buy the Note 7, okay? Yeah. Well, they now have accessible televisions that you can buy. In fact, if you go to Best Buy, now their inventory changes all the time. So I'm going to say this and watch you go there and they're not going to be there. But they are producing accessible guides for their televisions. And they're starting as cheap as $249, $259 for a television. And
you can probably get a pretty cheap washing machine too.
Yeah, probably a pretty cheap washing machine too, yeah. They're tending to blow up too. But their televisions are okay. But I know a number of people who have purchased these televisions and they work great. Even with over the air, antennas. If you're not a cable subscriber, they work great with that too. So these prices on accessible televisions are coming down. It's really good to see.
And was there somebody else in the back?
I had a question.
Who is that?
Sean.
Pardon me? Okay, I can't say your name.
This is
Sean. Go ahead.
I had a question about some of the online productivity tools like Google Docs and the online in the web browser Office. The last time I checked in Word, the only way that that was accessible is to print it as a, it created a readable PDF. And I'm finding that the Google Docs spreadsheets aren't that great. And I'm wondering, are we putting pressure on these companies, like the state, the university uses these things, requires them, schools do? Are we talking with them and working with them to make sure that students are able to use them, whether the, no matter what computer platform they're working on?
Yeah. Can I ask you a couple questions? Are you a screen reader user, sir?
I use VoiceOver on a Mac.
Okay. So, yes, we are very much involved with all of the companies, Apple, Microsoft, and Google. They all have online platforms for collaborative, you know, documents, whether it's spreadsheets or just, you know, documents themselves. So, yes. Also, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but AFB is looking to, in fact, today is the deadline. So hurry. They are wanting people to sign up for Google Docs training in Dallas, and all expenses paid, as I understand it.
Yep.
So Google is very much out there in trying to educate people on the use of their products. Microsoft has been very aggressive in working on improving the accessibility of their online platforms, and I will say that much has taken place there. I think you should give at least the Microsoft side another look for sure. The most important thing that I'll tell you about that, and Jenny mentioned it earlier, that is that you, to get the biggest improvement, you want to be on Office 365. If you're a student, you more than likely can get that for free from your university. If not, you can get it as cheap as $69 a year for a single license and $99 a year for five PCs and five tablets. So, you want to make sure that you're on their latest product.
Okay, was there one more person?
I'm going to type in from a state perspective real quick. We definitely see having a policy in place and being able to work with our vendors. Microsoft is a huge vendor, and be able to get these use cases that we find back to them by using the state as actual testers. University of Washington just did a test where they were actually able to create bugs in Office 365 with a group of users. And Microsoft opened them up so that we could actually do the testing ourselves and put bugs in their system. And they actually let us know where that bug is in their priority. I'm noticing other vendors are becoming more and more open to this idea that we actually get to send them our results and say, we need this as a feature. So this is kind of this interaction between the consumer and these companies. And I think the universities and I think the state are an excellent way to get right in there because they want our business.
I got a question.
I want to make one other comment on this. And Jenny mentioned this before too. It's really, really important that regardless of the company that you're providing feedback to them, Microsoft has user voice. I'm not really sure how to get Google information. both Google and Apple are more difficult to get into for, you know, they tend to keep very close to the vest. Yeah. But that's not necessarily going to get to, you know, their online collaborative tools and things like that, for example. But also don't be afraid to email accessibility@apple.com as well. They have a really strong team of people that work in that group. We work very, very closely with many of them, and that's probably for all of you going to be the quickest way to get feedback to Apple.
Jeff,
okay.
I have a question.
Okay, who had the last question? Just a minute. Okay, but was there somebody, Burl, before you? I want to... Okay, we'll have Burl and then Tim, and then that has to be it, guys.
So, Jeff, on November the 17th, the FCC is having some fairly important meetings about broadening the scope of audio descriptions. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So they're going to be making a determination on the 17th whether or not to increase the number of hours on broadcast television for audio description. We've done some surveys within the organization, and there's definite need out there for it. So we will have people at that meeting. I believe Eric and Tony will both be there. And so stay tuned. I think we've done a lot of advocacy work here as well as lots of other organizations. So I think it's going to go well. I'm crossing my fingers and my toes.
Tim?
Hello. Apparently this mic isn't working.
It's working fine.
Oh, it is. Okay, you can hear me now.
Hear you good.
I just had to get closer up to it. Oh, I got a question I haven't been able to get anybody to answer. Does anybody know if there's a way to make this screen reader not go away when the damn Microsoft cloud comes up? If I'm running, for example, a program that they haven't told me has the cloud, uses the cloud, but it does, all of a sudden JAWS just kind of goes away.
So I'm going to give you two tricks here. What can I ask? What version of Windows you're on, sir?
I'm still using an XP machine because I like it better than.
Oh, well.
Okay.
I would definitely look at upgrading soon.
I don't like the upgrades. That's why I haven't done it.
No, I understand. But from a security perspective,
yeah.
You're really, really at risk. I would very much reconsider that.
Well, a whole lot of
At least go to Windows 7.
Yeah. I have an 8.1 and I hate it. So.
Yeah. At least get it to Windows 7. You'll be a lot happier.
All right. Would all of you please join me in helping thank this very learned panel? Okay, we're going to have a 10-minute break again, but I'm going to encourage you to come back because it's 3:00. Can we do two door prizes, Daryl? All right.
Give away some money. How about that?
Okay, so if you're not here, I'll take the money. So it's $2.50. You get 10 minutes. And if our next panel person, if he's here, could come forward, that would be terrific.
Would you like us to do a door prize now, or?
No, we're going to do it at 3:00.
Okay.
The next panel is on identity fraud and identity theft and fraud and cooking. And why they're having Sue run a cooking panel, I do not know, but.